Jack Shepherd today is remembered as one of London's most famous criminals. But as a criminal, he was inept. What made him so famous was his multiple escapes. Every time he was caught, he was locked up in even more secure environments, and he still escaped. In today's episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast, we look at the incredible story of Jack Shepherd. Hi, and welcome back to the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. Since my last episode, I've managed to make it back out to the Far East, and I'm currently here in my condo in Manila, and it's a good job there isn't a visual element of the podcast. You'd see me sitting here, a bit hot, as I have to switch off the fans and the air conditioning, and I'm just sitting here in my shorts. Let's move on to the story. Jack Shepherd was born in Spitalfields in 1702. His father was a carpenter, born the character of an honest man, and he had another son named Thomas, who as well as Jack, turned out to be a thief. Old man Shepherd died when the boys were very young and they left to the care of the mother, who placed Jack at a school in Bishopsgate Street, where he remained 2 years and then was put as apprentice to a cane chairmaker in Houndsditch. His master dying when he had only been a short time with him, he was placed with another person in the same trade, but here he was so ill-treated that he remained only a short time, and then he was taken under the protection of Mr. Kneebone, a woolen draper in the Strand, who had some knowledge of his father. At length, Mr. Kneebone put him apprentice to a carpenter in Wych Street. He behaved with decency in this place for about 4 years. He started going to the Black Lion Alehouse in Drury Lane, and he became acquainted with some loose women. Amongst them, there was Elizabeth Lyon, otherwise known as Edgeworth Bess. While he continued to work as a carpenter, he often committed robberies in the houses where he was employed, stealing tankards, spoons, and other articles, which he carried to Edgeworth Bess. But not being suspected of having committed these robberies, he at length resolved to commence housebreaking. He also became acquainted with a woman named Maggot, who persuaded him to rob the house of Mr. Baines, a peace broker in Whitehorse Yard. And Jack, having brought away a piece of fustian from thence, and fustian is a heavy cloth used for men's undergarments, he deposited it in his trunk, went afterwards at midnight, and he took the bars out of the cellar window, entered, stole goods and money to the amount of £22, which he carried to Maggot. As Shepherd did not go home that night, nor the following day, his master suspected that he had made bad connections and searched his trunk, found the piece of fustian that had been stolen, but Shepherd, hearing of this, broke open his master's house in that night and carried off the fustian, lest it be brought as evidence against him. Shepherd's master sent intelligence to Mr. Baines of what had happened. The latter looked over his goods, and missing such a piece of fustian that had been described to him, suspected that Shepherd must have been the robber and determined to have him taken into custody. But Jack, hearing of the affair, went to him and threatened a prosecution for scandal, alleging that he'd received the piece of fustian from his mother, who bought it for him in Spitalfields. The mother, with a view to screen her son, declared that what he had was asserted to be true, although she could not point out the place where she was supposed to have made the purchase. Though this story was not credited, Mr. Baines did not take any further action in the affair. Shepherd's master seemed willing to think well of him, and he continued sometime longer in the family. But after associating himself with the worst company, and frequently staying out all night, his master and he quarrelled. And Jack just absconded in the last year of his apprenticeship, and he became connected with someone who we met earlier, a set of Jonathan Wilde's gang. Jack now worked as a journeyman carpenter with a view to the easier commission of robbery, and being employed to assist in repairing the house of a gentleman in Mayfair, he took an opportunity of carrying off a sum of money, a quantity of plate, some gold rings, and 4 suits of clothes. Not long after this, Edgeworth Bess was apprehended and lodged in the Roundhouse in the Paris of St. Giles, where Shepherd went to visit her, and the beadle, refusing to admit him, he knocked him down, broke open the door, and carried her off in triumph, an exploit which acquired him a high degree of credit with the girls in the town. In the month of August 1723, Thomas Shepherd, the brother of Jack, was indicted at the Old Bailey for 2 petty offences, and being convicted, was burnt in the hand. Soon after his discharge, he prevailed on Jack to lend him 40 shillings, and he then took him as a partner in his robberies. The first act they committed in concert was the robbing of a public house in Southwark, whence they carried off some money and wearing apparel. But Jack permitted his brother to reap the whole advantage of this booty. Not long afterwards, the brothers, in conjunction with Edgeworth Bess, broke open the shop of Mrs. Cook, a linen draper in Clare Street, and carried off goods to the value of £55. Less than a fortnight afterwards, they stole some articles from the house of Mr. Phillips in Drury Lane. Tom Shepherd was going to sell the stolen goods at Mrs. Cook's, but he was apprehended and committed to Newgate, where in the hope of being admitted in evidence, he impeached his brother and Edgeworth Bess, and they were sought for. At length, James Sykes, otherwise called Helen Fury, one of Shepherd's companions, meeting him in St. Giles, enticed him into a public house in the hope of receiving a reward for apprehending him. And while they were drinking, Sykes sent for a constable, who took Jack into custody and carried him before a magistrate, who, after a short examination, sent him to St. Giles Roundhouse. And this is where Shepherd starts going from petty, almost forgotten criminal to one of the most celebrated criminals in London history. But a flimsy roundhouse wasn't going to hold a carpenter like Shepherd. He broke through the roof in that place, and he made an escape in the night. He was on the run. Within a short time of this, Shepherd and an associate named Benson were crossing Leicester Fields, and the latter endeavoured to pick up gentleman's pocket of his watch, but failing in the attempt, the gentleman called out, "A pickpocket!" On which Shepherd was taken, and he was lodged in St. Anne's Roundhouse, where he was visited by Edgeworth Bess, who was detained on suspicion of being one of his accomplices. On the following day, they were carried before a magistrate, and with some persons appearing who'd charged them with the felonies, they were committed to New Prison. As they passed for husband and wife, they were permitted to lodge together in a room known by the name of Newgate Ward. Shepherd being visited by several of his acquaintances, some of them furnished him with implements to make his escape. And early in the morning, a few days after his commitment, he filed off his fetters, and having made a hole in the wall, he took an iron bar and a wooden one out of the window. But as the height from which he was to descend was 25 feet, he tied a blanket and sheet together, and making one of them fast to a bar in that window, Edgeworth Bess first descended, and Jack followed her. Having reached the yard, they still had a wall of 22 feet high to scale, but climbing up by the locks and the bolts of the great gate, they got out of the prison and effected a perfect escape. Shepherd's fame was greatly celebrated amongst the lower orders of people by his exploit, and all of the thieves of St. Giles courted his company. Shepherd was becoming a celebrated criminal, but also slightly better known. He formed an acquaintance with Anthony Lamb, an apprentice to a mathematical instrument maker near St. Clement's Church, and it was agreed to rob a gentleman who lodged with Lamb's master, and at 2 in the morning, Lamb let in the other villains who stole money and effects to a large amount. They left the door open and Lamb went to bed to prevent suspicion. But notwithstanding this, his master suspected him, and having him taken into custody, he confessed the whole affair before a magistrate, whereupon he was tried, convicted, and received a sentence of transportation. On the same day, Thomas Shepherd, the brother of Jack, was indicted for breaking open the dwelling house of Mary Cook and stealing her goods, and being convicted, was also sentenced to transportation. Jack Shepherd, not being in custody, he and Blueskin committed a number of daring robberies and sometimes disposed of the stolen goods to William Field. Jack used to say that Field wanted courage to commit a robbery. Shepherd and Blueskin hired a stable near the Horse Ferry, Westminster, in which they deposited their stolen goods till they could dispose of them to the best advantage. And in this place, they put the woolen cloth which was stolen from Mr. Kneebone. They then applied to Field to look at these goods and procure a customer for them, which he promised to do. Nor was he worse than his word, for in the night, he broke open their warehouse and stole the ill-gotten property, and he gave information against them to Jonathan Wilde, in consequence of which they were apprehended. At the session of the Old Bailey in August 1724, Shepherd was indicted for several offences, among the rest for breaking an entry of the house of William Kneebone and stealing 108 yards of woolen cloth and other articles, and being capitally convicted, he received a sentence of death. On Monday, the 30th of August 1724, a warrant was sent to Newgate for his execution. Here it must be observed that in the old jail of Newgate, there was within the lodge a hatch with large iron spikes, which hatch opened into a dark passage, whence there was a few steps into the condemned hole. The prisoners being permitted to come down the hatch to speak with their friends, Shepherd, having been supplied with some instruments, took an opportunity of cutting one of the spikes in such a manner it might be easily broken off. On the evening of the above mentioned day, two women of Shepherd's acquaintance going to visit him, he broke off the spike, and thrusting his head and shoulders through the space, the women pulled him down, and he effected his escape. notwithstanding some of the keepers were at that time drinking at the other end of the lodge, but having intelligence of his retreat, took Shepherd again into custody and conveyed him to his old lodgings. Such steps were now taken, as thought would be effectual to prevent his future escape. Notwithstanding, Shepherd was continually employed his thoughts on the means of another escape. On the 14th of October, the sessions began at the Old Bailey, and the keepers were engaged in attending the court. He thought they would have little time to visit him, and therefore the perfect juncture, which he deemed the most favourable to carry out any plan and execution. The keeper had not left him for more than an hour, and he began his operation. He first took off his handcuffs, then opened the padlock that fastened the chain to the staple. He next, by mere strength, twisted asunder a small link of the chain between his legs, and then drawing up his fetters as high as he can make them, fast with his garters. He then attempted to get up the chimney, but he had not advanced far before he was stopped by an iron bar that went right across it, on which he descended, and with a piece of his broken chain, picked out the mortar, and moving a small stone or two about 6 feet from the floor, he got out the iron bar, which was 3 feet long and an inch square. This would provide him with a very useful tool. In a short time, he made such a breach which enabled him to get into the red room, and here he found a large nail, which he made further use of. It was 7 years since the door of this red room had been opened, but Shepherd wrenched off the lock in less than 7 minutes and got into the passage leading to the chapel. In this place, he found a door which was bolted on the opposite side, but making a hole through the wall, he pushed the bolt back and opened the door. Arriving at the door of the chapel, he broke off one of the iron spikes, which, keeping for further use, he got into an entry between the chapel and the lower leads. The door of this entry was remarkably strong and fastened with a large lock, and night was coming on now. Shepherd was obliged to work in the dark. Notwithstanding this disadvantage, in half an hour, forced open the box of the lock and opened the door, but this led to just another room, still more difficult, for it was barred and bolted as well as locked. However, he wrenched the fillet from the main post of the door, and the box and staples came off with it. It was now 8 o'clock, and Shepherd found no further obstruction to his proceedings, for he had only one door to open, which being bolted on the inside, he accomplished without difficulty, and got over the wall to the upper leads. His next consideration was how he should descend with the greatest safety. Accordingly, he found that the most convenient place for him to alight would be the Turner's House, adjoining to Newgate. But as it would have been very difficult to have jumped such a depth, he went all the way back to his cell for the blanket which he used to cover himself. He made this fast to the wall of Newgate with the spike that he took out of the chapel, and sliding down, he dropped on the Turner's leads just as the clock was striking 9. It happened that the door of the garret next to the Turner's leads was open, on which he stole softly down 2 pairs of stairs and heard some company talking in a room. His irons clinking, a woman cried, "What noise is that?" A man answered, "Perhaps the cat or the dog." Shepherd, who was exceedingly fatigued, returned to the garret and laid down for more than 2 hours, after which he crept down as far as the room where the company were, when he heard a gentleman taking his leave of the family and saw the maid light him down the stairs. As soon as the maid returned, he resolved to venture at all hazards, but in stealing down the stairs, he stumbled against a chamber door, but instantly recovering himself, he got into the street. By this time, it was after 12 o'clock, and passing by the watch house of St. Sepulchre's, he bid the watchman good morrow, and going up Holborn, he turned into Gray's Inn Lane, and was about 2 in the morning when he got into the fields near Tottenham Court, where he took shelter in a place that had been a cowhouse, and slept soundly for about 3 hours. His fetters being still on, his legs were greatly bruised and swelled, and he dreaded the approach of daylight, lest he should be discovered. He had now about 40 shillings in his possession, but was afraid to send any person for assistance. At 7 in the morning, it began to rain hard, and continued to do so all day, so that no person approached in the fields. And during this melancholy day, he would, to use his own expression, have given his right hand for a hammer, a chisel, and a punch. Night coming on, and being pressed by hunger, he ventured into a little chandler's shop in Tottenham Court Road, where he got a supply of bread, cheese, and small beers, and other necessaries, hiding in his irons under a long greatcoat. He asked the woman of the house for a hammer, but she didn't have one. He then went back to the cowhouse, where he slept all night and remained all the next day. At night, he went again to the chandler's shop, supplied him with some provisions, and returned to his hiding place. At 6 the next morning, which was a Sunday, he began to beat the basils of his fetters with a stone and order them to bring them to an oval form to slip his heels through. In the afternoon, the master of the cowhouse, coming thither and seeing his irons, said, "For God's sake, who are you?" Shepherd said he was an unfortunate young fellow who, having a bastard child sworn to him and not been able to give it security to the parish for its support, he had been sent to Bridewell, from whence he had made his escape. The master did not help him and made Shepherd leave the cowhouse. Soon afterwards, Shepherd saw a journeyman shoemaker to whom he told the same story of the bastard child and offered him 20 shillings if he would procure him a smith's hammer and a punch. The man, tempted by the reward, procured them accordingly and assisted him in getting rid of his irons, which work was completed by 5 o'clock in the evening. The next day, he hired a garret in Newport Market, and afterwards, dressing himself like a porter, he went to Blackfriars, to the house of Mr. Appleby, printer of the Dying Speeches, and delivered a letter in which he ridiculed the printer, the Ordinary of Newgate, and enclosed a letter for one of the keepers of Newgate. Some nights after this, he broke open the shop of Mr. Rollins, a pawnbroker in Drury Lane, where he stole a sword, a suit of wearing apparel, some snuff boxes, rings, watches, and some other effects to a considerable amount. Determined to make the appearance of a gentleman amongst his old acquaintances in Drury Lane and Clare Market, he dressed himself in a suit of black and a wig, a shirt, a silver-hilted sword, a diamond ring, and a gold watch, though he knew a diligent check was probably being made for him at that very time in that place, and yet he still went. And it wasn't long before an alehouse boy who knew him informed on him when Shepherd was quite drunk. He was taken into custody, and he was absolutely belotto from the quantity and variety of liquors they had drank, and he was taken back to Newgate in a coach without any resistance, even though he had 2 loaded pistols in his pockets. Having already been convicted, he was carried to the bar of the court of the King's Bench on the 10th of November, and the record of his conviction was read, and an affidavit that he was the same Jack Shepherd mentioned in the record. Sentence of death was passed to him by Mr. Justice Powers. A rule of court was made for his execution on the Monday following. This time, there would be no escape, for he was guarded night and day. He was so popular, and people flooded to his cell to see him. But even when the day of execution arrived, he did not appear to have given over any expectations of eluding justice. For having been furnished with a penknife, he put it in his pocket with a view when the melancholy procession came opposite Little Turnstile to have cut the cord that bound his arms and thrown himself out of the car amongst the crowd to have run through the narrow passage where the sheriff's officers could not follow on horseback. But before he left the press yard, one Watson, an officer, searching his pockets, found the knife and was cut with it. He behaved with great decency at the place of execution and confessed for having committed two robberies for which he'd been tried and acquitted. He suffered at Tyburn on the 16th of November, 1722, just 23 years of age. He died with difficulty and was much pitied by the surrounding multitude. When he was cut down, his body was delivered to his friends, who carried him to a public house in Longacre, whence it was removed in the morning, and he was buried in the churchyard of St. Martin in the Fields. This extraordinary man, who was undoubtedly possessed of the most wonderful abilities and ingenuity, though misapplied, acquired a huge popularity at the time. Songs were written, poems written, and even plays. He was the hero of the stage at the time of his execution, John Thurmond having produced at the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, a pantomime piece called Harlequin Shepherd. Artists came to see him, particularly Sir James Thornhill, who painted a picture. Whenever an account of Jack Shepherd is printed, that pencil drawing is there, and we can imagine that youth who had so much life ahead of him, wasted it again, and when he had his chance to escape, he just couldn't escape London. He could have done what Dick Turpin did, but Jack, for all his ingenuity, lacked any invention, intelligence, and was just drawn back to the places he knew, but they were just trapped. That's it for another episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I hope you enjoyed that one. If you did, please like, subscribe. Until the next time, bye-bye.